American Novels. In the proud rediscovery of our past, Americans are turning with more and more enthusiasm to our first renowned national literary figure. The New York in which he was born in 1783 furnished an inexhaustible treasury for the freshness and excitement of his writings, as well as for the enjoyment of all who were to read him. NBC's University of the Air brings you one of his beloved stories as narrated by the author under his pseudonym of Dietrich Knickerbocker. Another in our series of books that live, Washington Irving's Legend of Sleepy Hollow.
In the bosom of one of those spacious coves which indent the shore of the Hudson, there lies a small rural port by the name of Tarrytown. It is of particular interest this week because Tarrytown is the focus of attention as America's model community for United Nations Week. Not far from this village, perhaps about 2 miles, there's a little valley among high hills, which is one of the quietest places in the world. From the listless repose of the place, this sequestered glen has long been known by the name of Sleepy Hollow. A drowsy, dreamy influence seems to hang over the land and to pervade the very atmosphere. Most of the good inhabitants would have you believe that the neighborhood was at one time bewitched.
Aye, bewitched. Bewitched as sure as I'm sitting here by my spinning wheel. Long before this country was discovered by Master Hendrik Hudson, an old Indian chief, a wizard he was, held his secret communings with the spirits in this very spot of land. And his spirit still haunts the place.
Yes, indeed. The whole neighborhood abounds with local tales, haunted spots and twilight superstitions. But this is one specter who seemed the commander-in-chief of this region. The apparition of a figure on horseback without a head.
And woe be to those of you who would scoff at him. He is as real as the living who ride the hills by day.
It is the ghost of a Hessian trooper whose head was carried away by a cannonball during a revolutionary battle.
And in the gloom of night he rides along on the wings of the wind, in search of his head.
There's not a soul within this valley who does not know and fear him. The Headless Horseman.
Aye, the Headless Horseman.
To this byplace of nature, some 15 years after the Revolution, there came a personage from the state of Connecticut. He was tall and lank, with narrow shoulders and hands that dangled a mile out of his sleeves. His feet might have served for shovels, and his whole body was so loosely hung together that to see him striding across a hill with his clothes bagging about him, one might easily have mistaken him for some scarecrow eloped from a cornfield. His name was Ichabod Crane. The main duty of Master Crane was to instruct the children of the vicinity. His schoolhouse was a low log building of one room, whose windows were partly glazed and partly patched with old copybooks.
Silence! Silence! Or I shall keep all of you after school for a solid hour. Now, Wouter, proceed. The class is waiting, Wouter. You will kindly solve the problem I gave you.
Put down 6 and carry 3.
Quiet. Put down 6 and carry 4.
Oh, Yeah. Carry four.
Proceed.
I can't do the sum, sir.
Do you recollect, Walter, that this is one of the sums I gave you yesterday to study at home?
Yes, sir.
Perhaps you need something stronger than word of mouth to teach you your sums.
No, sir. I'll learn them. Please. Oh,
idleness is a vicious sin. The hurt will soon pass, Walter, but you will always remember the lesson you have learned today and thank me for it till the longest day you live. Spare the rod and spoil the child. And now, for the next sum.
The lordly sway with which he ruled in his little empire, the school, was only one facet of Ichabod's nature, however. Since he lived a week at a time with the farmers of the neighborhood, and since he was an amazingly huge feeder, it behooved him to make himself both useful and agreeable to his patrons.
I think I have that fence tolerably well mended, Mistress Van Ritter.
I'm obliged to you, Master Crane. And my husband wonders if he'd be so kind to take the horses to water.
Horses to water, right away.
But first I have a few things for you to do here.
At your service, horses to water.
I've been so busy about the house, I neglected to churn butter for supper.
Churn the butter? Certainly. Water horses.
Thank you. That's the churn by the fireplace. The cream's already in it.
Oh, there's nothing like fresh churned butter for supper, I always say.
Heavens, now the baby starts to fret and me with a meal to prepare. It wants to get out of its crib. While you're sitting there churning, Master Crane, perhaps you could watch the baby if I put it on the floor beside you.
Oh, yes, indeed. Only too happy to. There's nothing like seeing a child happy, I always say.
Just be sure you keep an eye on him. He crawls faster than I can walk.
Oh, you don't have any cause to fret with me here. Water horses, churn baby, watch by.
Oh, and after you take the horses to water, my husband would like you to bring the cows back from the pasture.
Oh, yes, indeed. Glad to. Horses to pasture, cows to water.
And while you're down that way, you might stop in the hen house and see if there are any fresh eggs that want collecting.
I'll be sure to remember. Collect babies, churn horses, or water eggs.
Oh, dearie me, as if I didn't have enough to please me.
Was something gone awry?
The wood bin is completely empty, and I'm ready to build a fire for supper. I meant to ask you to cut some wood for me this morning before you went to the school.
Oh, well, I'll do it now. Chop eggs, water, baby. Baby to wood and churn the cows. Oh, my, oh, my. There, all safe.
Oh, but what a frightening it gave me. A whole churn might have been filled. You mustn't take your eyes off him for a minute, Master Crane.
Yes, Mistress Van Ritter, I should have remembered.
But for all his trials, Ichabod had his pleasant moments, too. The schoolmaster is generally a man of some importance in the female circle of a rural neighborhood. And Ichabod particularly was esteemed by the women as a man of great erudition, for he had read several books quite through, and was a perfect master of Cotton Mather's History of New England Witchcraft, in which, by the way, he most firmly believed. So it was that he spent many a long evening with the old Dutch wives as they sat spinning by the fire, with a row of apples roasting and spluttering along the hearth, swapping tales of ghosts and goblins.
And on this night I'm telling you of, Master Crane, just as I left the deathbed of Mistress and walked out into the midnight air, I looked up to the sky. There was a strange sort of breeze, cold and wet, and I wondered what it caused it.
Yes?
I looked toward the sky, and there I saw a white object floating upward. I watched until it was completely out of sight, until she had vanished into heaven.
It was her soul.
Aye, her soul. That I am sure of.
I remember the time well, Mistress Van Winkle. You told me of it the very next morning.
Oh, 'tis a wondrous thing, to be sure. It brings to my mind a somewhat similar experience I once had in my native state of Connecticut.
Oh, tell us about it.
I do, Master Crane.
Well, I was traveling from one village to another late at night when I came upon a house.
Aye, the faithful with you.
It was a lonely, completely abandoned place, but I was glad of any roof at that point. I had a terrible time getting my horse up to the house. He balked and neighed in a terrible manner.
He knew.
Aye, mistress, it was a haunted house. There was the sound of a ghostly fiddle that filled the air. And now and then I heard snatches of crazy laughter and footsteps up and down the creaking stairs, though no one was even to be seen. I called out, "Is anyone here?" But I got not an answer.
What a brave man you were, to call to a ghost.
Well, there's really nothing to be feared from the dead. Then I searched the house. But not a soul did I find, though the footsteps accompanied me wherever I went. Finally, the rain ceased. I left the house and climbed up on my horse, who took off like the wind, so glad was he to be free of that place. And, if you will believe it, many times after that, in the light of day, I traced the path of that diresome night, and I've never been able to find that spectral house.
The spirits carried it away after you found their hiding place.
So I have come to believe.
It is not many men would have had such courage as yours, Master Crane.
Well,
aye, that is right. I can see that he will not hold the terror for you. He does for so many of us from Tarrytown and Sleepy Hollow.
He?
A headless horse?
Yes, the headless horseman.
You've surely heard of him by now.
Buried in the churchyard on the hill?
Oh, yes, to be sure I've heard of him.
Have you, perchance, seen him?
No, oh no.
Ah, but you will anon.
Yes.
You will.
Yes, well, I fear it's growing late. I'd best be going.
Oh, tarry a while. I can tell you many tales concerning the headless horseman.
At another time, I should very much relish it, but now I really must be on my way.
Very well. But welcome any time, Master Crane.
Thank you kindly. Oh, it's a dark and moonless night.
Aye, pitch black.
Well, I'd better. I wonder, Mistress Van Winkle, if you have a lantern you might spare me for the walk home, just that I may not trip upon fallen logs and stones. Just a small lantern.
The return of daylight, however, put an end to these terrors of the dark and all its evils, and Ichabod would have passed a pleasant life of it, if his path had not been crossed by a being that causes more perplexity to mortal man than ghosts, goblins, and the whole race of witches put together. And that was a woman. She was Katrina Van Tassel. In addition to his other vocations, Ichabod was the singing master of the neighborhood. Among the musical disciples who assembled one evening each week was Katrina, a fresh, blooming lass of 18, who delighted in collecting the hearts of men as some women collect thimbles and teacups.
Well, I think that was a very good rendition. What think you, Miss Van Tassel?
Oh, indeed it was, Master Crane. We have improved so very much since you began instructing us in psalmody.
Thank you. Thank you very much. You're very kind.
Oh, and you are far too modest.
Well, of course, one evening a week is scarcely enough time to give to such an important matter. I mean, that is with someone like you in particular, whose voice is by far the loveliest in the countryside.
Oh, Master Crane, I fear you're trying to turn my head with such compliments.
Oh, but I assure you, every word of it comes from my heart. And if I could but practice with you a bit at some other times, it would be a great help to our choir in general, because you would progress so markedly.
But how could such a thing be managed?
Well, the thought just now occurs to me that I might, if your good parents would not object, I might perhaps call upon you at your home now and then of an evening and practice with you there.
Oh, I couldn't think of taking so much of your valuable time, Master Crane.
I assure you, I would consider it an honor, a very true honor, and it's for the greater good of the choir.
Very well, Master Crane. You may come, then. For the greater good of the choir.
Already smitten by her personal charms, when Ichabod entered her paternal mansion, the conquest of his heart was complete. For the Van Tassel farm was by far the richest in the land, and Katrina, an only child, would someday inherit it. To our penniless pedagogue, these vast expectations caused his imagination to run riot. But in his inflated fancyings, he overlooked two very important facts. The first, that Katrina was a true coquette with all the wiles and caprices of those vexing creatures. And secondly, that Brom Van Brunt, or Brom Bones as this stout hero was called, was a man to be reckoned with when his anger and jealousy were roused.
Hi, Brom. It looks like you've met a rival this time who not only doesn't want to fight you, but who refuses to. You're having to go by his rules this time.
I'd like to get my hands on that buffoon's scrawny neck.
What would you do to him, Brom? Tell us.
I'd double him up and lay him on a shelf of his own schoolhouse like a bundle of kindling wood.
That would be a sight.
I'd stuff him inside one of his dunce caps.
Why don't you, then?
You know very well why. The laggard won't give me a chance. He refuses open warfare. Hides from me. Covers up his attentions to Katrina under the guise of teaching psalmody.
Bah! Well, perhaps you could at least think of some trickeries to plague him, Brom.
And who do you think it was who smoked up the schoolhouse the other day by stuffing up the chimney?
Oh. Yes, and who was it that broke into the schoolhouse and turned everything topsy-turvy? Do you think it was the headless horseman?
The headless horseman?
Well, still and all, those noises haven't stopped his calling on Katrina.
The headless horseman there, Hendrick, is an adversary who might have some influence on Master Crane.
Well, I've never known that white to go within a mile of the old graveyard.
Mm-hmm.
What is it, Brom? You seem to be in a deep study.
Aye, it has just struck me that if Ichabod Crane won't fight me in the manner I know, if he insists upon doing things slyly, I shall have to fight him the same way.
Well, Master Crane, your hair is unusually well combed this evening. In fact, you have about your whole person a rather festive air.
Oh, indeed, a festive occasion, Mynheer Van Ripper. You see, Mynheer Van Tassel and his good wife are entertaining at a quilting frolic this evening. It shall be quite a merry-making affair.
Yes, yes, I'm sure. Well, enjoy yourself.
Oh, thank you, but, Mynheer.
No?
I never like to ask favors of those who are so kind as to house me, but I wondered, in this particular instance, if you would be so good as to make me the loan of your horse for the evening.
Gunpowder?
Oh, that is, of course, if you're not planning to use him.
All right. But remember, gunpowder's just a plow horse, and an old one at that.
Oh, I shall be more considerate of him than you can imagine.
All right. Take him.
Oh, I can't tell you how grateful I am. As I said, I plan to make this a memorable occasion.
As ill luck would have it, Ichabod had to tie his gaunt and shagged horse next to Daredevil, the favorite steed of Brom Bones, a creature who, like his master, was full of mettle and mischief. But even this did not dampen the spirit of conquest with which our hero entered the state parlor of Van Tassel's mansion, which was thronged with the pride and flower of the adjacent country. In spite of his desire to see Katrina, Ichabod could not resist first pausing at the Dutch tea table with its sumptuous spread. And just as he had a hearty mouthful of cruller...
Well, who have we here but Ichabod Crane? Just a friendly slap on the back, friend. Hope I didn't cause you discomfort.
Oh, no. Good evening, Brom.
Aye, it is a good evening, Ichabod. A time for making merry and being friendly. I'm glad to see you here.
Well, thank you.
Tell me, have you seen Katrina?
Not yet.
Well, then be off and do so. I'm sure she's been looking for you.
Oh, you really think so?
Don't you think so?
If you'll excuse me, I'll just...
Aye, Ichabod. And I repeat, I'm very glad to see you here.
Katrina, in truth, you are the flower of all the lasses here.
Oh, Ichabod, you must not flatter me so.
Oh, but Katrina, I'm most sincere. Everything I say to you is spoken with the greatest of honesty and feeling.
Oh, I must ask that you excuse me. My mother is beckoning to me from the other room.
Oh, so many people demanding her attention, I scarcely have a word with her. Oh, but that's not her fault. By chance, she'll come. Katrina!
Why, Ichabod, I thought you had gone.
I took the liberty of staying after the others left. I'd like to speak with you.
Very well. What is it?
Couldn't we perhaps go out to the arbor or by the well?
It's turned quite chill out. I'd rather stay inside.
Oh, but it's...
You may say whatever it is here.
Well, it wasn't so much something to say as to ask.
Then ask me.
Oh, well, I'd like to speak to your father.
Oh, I thought you wanted to speak to me.
Oh, yes, but that is, I would like to speak to your father about you. I'd like to ask for your hand.
My hand?
In marriage.
In marriage? In marriage? Marriage?
It was the very witching time of night that Ichabod, heavy-hearted and crestfallen, pursued his travels homeward. In the dead hush of midnight, no signs of life occurred near him. All stories of ghosts and goblins that he had heard in Sleepy Hollow now came crowding his mind. The night grew darker and darker. The stars seemed to sink deeper in the sky. He had never felt so lonely and dismal. He was, moreover, approaching the giant tulip tree, where many people said was a favorite spot for ghosts and goblins. As Ichabod approached this fearful tree, he began to whistle. Then, as he drew a bit nearer, his large green eyes grew ever bigger.
Oh, there's something white hanging in that tree. No. Only a spot where lightning has scathed it and laid the wood bare. Come on, Gunpowder. What was that? Oh, but two boughs of the tree rubbing against each other. Be afraid, Gunpowder. If there were but some way to get back without crossing Wily Swamp. All who know say it's a haunted stream. I shall give Gunpowder a score of kicks, and then we'll cross the bridge quickly. Now. No. You're going the wrong way, Gunpowder. We must cross the logs, not run beside them. Giddy up. Now, turn around, Gunpowder. What was that? Oh, something. Something in the shadow of that grove. Something black and towering. I must show it I'm not afraid. Who are you? Who are you? Who doesn't answer? I must get away. Come on, Gunpowder. Oh, it's coming out of the shadows. But it's still so dark, I can only tell it's a horseman. Large, on a powerful horse. Perhaps we can outride him. Oh, he's riding fast, too. I don't like this. Perhaps if we lag behind, he will pass us, Gunpowder. He's slacking with us. Oh, we're coming to a rise in the ground where it's lighter. Perhaps I should recognize him. He's headless. Oh, he's carrying his head before him on the saddle. He's chasing us. Faster, Gunpowder.
I shall have to hang onto your neck, Gunpowder. If we can just reach the bridge, we shall be safe. The headless horseman does not cross there. Oh, he's right behind us. I can feel the breath of the horse on my neck. Come on, Gunpowder. Over the bridge at last. Oh, he's rising in his stirrups. He's throwing his head at me.
And it was right here by the bridge that I found his hat and the shattered pumpkin. It seemed the pumpkin had been thrown from some distance.
Oh, dear, dear.
I found my horse, Gunpowder, outside my gate the next morning. There was no sign of Master Crane at breakfast, nor the dinner hour.
The boys assembled at school that day, but he never appeared.
And he hasn't been seen nor heard from since.
How I should miss him. He could recount so many tales of his bravery among ghosts and goblins.
Some years later, an old farmer who had been down to New York on a visit reported that Ichabod Crane was still alive, had studied law, and finally been made a justice of the 10-pound court. Brom Bones, too, who shortly after the disappearance led Katrina to the altar, was observed to look exceedingly knowing whenever the story of Ichabod was told. And he always burst into a hearty laugh at the mention of the pumpkin, which led some to suspect he knew more than he chose to tell. But the old country wives, however, who are the best judges of these matters, maintain to this day that
there are no two ways to the matter. Poor Master Crane was carried off by the galloping Hector.
He was spirited off to another world by the headless horseman.
Aye, the headless horseman.
And the tragedy is a favorite story, often told round the fire on a winter evening in Tarrytown and Sleepy Hollow.
The Legend of Sleepy Hollow by Washington Irving is one of America's novels, brought to you each week by the NBC University of the Air. Listen next week to a radio version of Little Women by Louisa May Alcott. And remember that there's a world of entertainment and information to be found in your local public library. Many American novels in the 1947 summer series are included in the useful handbook of the World's Great Novels, which you may obtain by sending 25 cents to World's Great Novels, Post Office Box 30, Station J, New York 27, New York. That's Post Office Box 30, Station J, New York 27. The Legend of Sleepy Hollow was adapted for radio by Agnes Eckhart. The music was composed by Emil Soderstrom, and the orchestra was directed by Bernard Berquist. The entire production was under the direction of Herbert Lateau. Ichabod Crane was played by Don Gallagher. Maury Copeland played Brom Bones. Elmira Ressler played Katrina. The narrator was Philip Lord. Viola Berwick was Mistress Van Ritter. The wives were Hilda Graham and Alma Platt. Others were Stuart Sklam, George Kluge, and Charles Mumford. This is Don Eldridge. This program comes to you from Chicago and is a presentation of the National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.